legs up in my white coat. Leno got his do-rag. I'm lit, I got my stethoscopes. Welcome to
Do-rags and stethoscopes.
Welcome to
Do-rags and stethoscopes.
Wave tsunamis when they crash, current strong, it's a rip. If you not feeling well, I might just have to write a script. Welcome to
Do-rags and stethoscopes.
Welcome to
Do-rags and stethoscopes.
People are gonna think that that's business as usual.
Welcome in to another episode of Do-Rags and Stethoscopes. As always, I am your boy, Lit MD, here with Leno, the Wave God. Man, got his shades on.
And they spinning too, baby. What's happening?
Got the waves spinning on them. And then, as you know, we always got the homie Shock coming in from...
Bonjour. Comment ça va?
Ça va bien. Et toi? Au revoir.
Mm-hmm. He's speaking Ebola. Let's go.
Stop, I say.
Get it started. Stop, I say. Nah, I'm playing with y'all. All right. So we wanted to get right into it. There's we've had some milestones. You know, it's been a little minute since we've been back on the pod. But things that we've realized when we cross that threshold of becoming 30, right? All of us full grown men, you know, kids, families, wives, everything, right? In our 30s. What is something that you would say that when you turned 30, you were like, I didn't know that it was like this. I could set the scene. When you wake up in a quiet room at the age of 30 plus, the amount of sounds that you hear, all generated by your body without intention, are insane. I'm talking about both ankles, the knees, the hips. The back will crack in four spots. My lips is so dry that they just hurt to open. I don't even know what happened yet, right? I haven't even said good morning. What'd you notice when you turned 30?
Hey, that food hit different, man. That food fucking hit different. That's way different.
You know, Shock, I'm glad you brought that up, because y'all done known me a long time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
I done finally crossed that threshold.
What?
I remember being in my younger days saying how much food was going to take me out when I got of age, because I was never going to change my diet. I was never going to stop eating X, Y. It's certain stuff that you just can't eat anymore once you cross that threshold. So you right on point with that food be hitting different.
The whole
like
pizza.
It's like in more foods now, and it's foods that you got to put down for sure. But for me personally, it's definitely my body just starting to fall apart on me in spots that I didn't even know could start falling apart.
Like what?
Like my nigga, my toe hurt. I have. Nigga, can you imagine being in your 20s talking about something? My toe has never hurt me a day in my life, but I'm walking around as we speak with a hurt toe.
Like turf toe or?
Nigga, it feel like I got a knot right there on the big knuckle on my big toe. Like I done sprained or I done damaged the ligament right there on the top knuckle of that big toe right there. And it's been nagging me. I've been trying to play through it. See, that's another thing too. You get a bump or a bruise in your 20s, you say, nah, I got to play through it. And then it starts, it feel better and you get to easing into it. Mm-hmm. I keep trying to play through this shit and I keep making it worse. Like this is not how shit used to work when I was in my 20s and I was recovering.
You just regenerate, right?
Just you recover totally different when you turn 30. I don't know what it is, but the recovery time is different. You gotta not do stuff to recover. And then you start losing.
You have
weight.
To rest.
Then you gotta rest, you gotta ice.
You know what I'm saying? I'm
gotta take a
You try to go to the gym, like, damn, do I even remember I'm looking at the weight I was lifting and I'm looking at the weight I'm putting on there now. And say, I'm struggling with that weight. I said, nah, there's got to be something different we got to be doing. I can't be taking these long breaks to recover. And then not being
not me, man.
It's not there no more.
And then the other part about being in your 30s, I hope y'all can relate. I can. Like, do you talk to your body? right? Where you like, come on, we could do it. Like you try to motivate your body, but in your 30s, your body's like, shut up, shut the hell up. What you talking about?
You know what it was? Even I tried to tell myself, nigga, do you really have to make all them sound effects when you getting up or when you sitting down or when you do, when you make any type of movement? And I said to myself, nigga, no, I don't. And I do. Since that day, I haven't been able to do anything. I ain't been able to do nothing without getting up and making some type of sound.
Like, it's an absolute must. I don't know if y'all remember that show on like Spike TV.
Wyatt Library?
Huh?
Silent Library?
Nah, man. He used to deal with, when Spike TV was like the guy channel, but they used to do this whole bunch of like that. Man size shit, and that used to be one of the things, is fucking groaning and making some sounds whenever like some shit hurts to get through it, bro. You gotta do that shit.
Yes,
bro, just rolling out of fucking bed, bro. Knee, ankle, that ain't trying to fucking toes, nor if my toes goddamn work. And don't get me started, my back.
Mm-hmm.
Nigga, when I start standing up, my back, oh, that's the loudest groan out of the fucking shit, bro. But you gotta do it, man. Real nigga shit, bro.
It saddens me to realize, like, to really grasp that, like, I am at this stage where no matter what I do. So I'll give y'all an example, right? I had to go to a medical conference. It was at Duke. And I met up with some of my homeboys from back in the day. And they wanted to play pickup. Okay? Cool. My dog was
playing. Wait a minute. Go ahead. I want to hear the rest of the story because you shouldn't have been had. You don't have no business playing pickup no way, but go ahead.
Hey, it's okay. None of that's going to hurt me. None of us are pro. I'm about to say, I got buckets and we won.
For yourself, no.
Go ahead. Tell the story. My bad, bro. My bad.
All right. Well, we got, anyways. So we were playing pickup, right? And I was doing the thing is what I know I can do. And that's another part about turning 30. I know the aspects of my game that I can do. And the aspects that I can't do. And there is nothing that ain't no more develop, no player development. I will never develop a jump shot. But I can still dish. I can play a little bit of defense. These young kids getting crazy now. We played like 4 games of pickup. We won 3 of them, right? The last game was that one where, you know, when the older high schoolers show up, the 17, 18-year-olds show up, and I'm like, they got way too much to prove. Like, we playing outdoor pickup basketball, 3-on-3. So I think game was a 13. We ended up winning, but like after every possession, I had to stop and I was talking to myself like, come on, you got this. You got this, right? All that motivational bull crap. My left knee swelled up so bad, dog. I could barely get my sweatpants off. I had never had knee swelling in my life. And I was looking at it and the sad part is I'm a doctor and I was legit like, my knee ain't swollen. It just happens to be 3 times the size of the other one. It's, maybe I got, I legit was like, it had to be a mosquito in my sweatpants. My knee has swelled up. And then the doctor in me came out, I overreacted. The next day at work, I went to see one of the orthopedic surgery residents. I was like, hey, I need my knee drained. He said, for what? Look at it, it's swollen. He was like, it don't look too bad. He did something. I'm like, did some manipulation. He was like, you might have damaged your meniscus. I said, don't you dare curse at me. My meniscus is fine, okay? Drain this fluid and let's get it popping. He was like, well, first you got to take ibuprofen. Ibuprofen? You don't think I would have thought about taking some ibuprofen? Of course, I ain't taking no ibuprofen. Completely forgot, bro. I took about 6 of them. Inflammation was gone. Ended that with a bucket. And I had a game-winning bucket. Yes, I was playing against a 13-year-old, a 17-year-old, and a 16-year-old. But that 17-year-old was 6.
There it is. Now, there it is, ladies and gentlemen.
It was 6'8".
I don't need, you need to ask no questions. I'm at peace now. So how many points you had, like, total you take?
You know I don't keep score. See, that's how you try to trick me. Because only the bums keep score in a pickup game. That's a trick, ladies and gentlemen. To anyone listening, I have 4 points and 3 assists. So if you remember your points in pickup game, you trash.
So all right, so maybe not points, but like bucket wise, how many buckets you think you how many shots you think you hit? Like know you hit.
Well, it's easier to say what I know I made. I made all my layups.
Nah, man. Hey, whether you're a baller or not, a true baller or not, all ballers will go ahead and throw out a guess. Nigga, fuck this. Okay, there.
It's a lose-lose situation, right? Legit. If you keep track of your score and pick up.
No, because before it was before that when you said it was a 13 and a 17-year-old. Because you ain't getting no love for me from a 30, you'd be a 13-year-old. And you on here talking about something you was giving out buckets to a 13-year-old. But I honestly wanted to know how many buckets you thought you had. Because, you know, you want like a hooper like talking about.
No, I never claimed to be a hooper. That's why I started to understand what I could.
That was funny about that part because I was you saying you was out there getting buckets. I'm trying to see how my niggas were getting buckets, but that was on a 13-year-old. I mean,
no, I wasn't guarding the 13-year-old. I was guarding one of the 17-year-olds or 18, whatever.
How so that cleared that making it right there.
That making it.
Six. Come on, now, I refuse to guard the youngest one because how bad does it look if I remember? I dropped 10 points on a 13-year-old. That's way worse than being like, no, I guard one of the adults.
You're supposed to be the OG out there now. You don't have to play no defense on the 13-year-old. Facts. You know what I'm saying? Let the 13-year-old get his man, maybe let him hit a shot or two, boost his confidence up a little bit. You know what I'm saying? And then let your team work on the offense and just get him out the way because you know what I'm saying? We ain't worried about him on defense.
Well, but that's the thing, though. This wasn't like your everyday 13-year-old. These were like, you could tell that they had played some AAU. They definitely had, like, they played established basketball to the point where, like, especially at my size, I'm just another 13-year-old on the court to him. Like, he don't see nothing different. He is no Alexander.
Okay. That's apples. Oh, no, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nah, but that's aging for you, right? That's 30. And then... caring less is another thing you get to when you cross 30. Some things, like today I got home from work, y'all, the trash can was tipped over. I was like, Like, I picked it up.
You picked it up. I thought you would have left it there. I would have understood.
HOA gonna be tripping now. I don't like HOA feed.
I feel that.
Also, it's Florida. You leave stuff out like that.
Alligator. I can't believe I came down to Florida. I ain't seen no damn alligator. I was pissed.
Yo, that shit's a lie, man.
That's gotta be. Some man, they be playing it. It ain't no way.
Talking about gators this, gator that.
Man,
I saw one that's like 3 days ago driving to work.
The only thing I saw is a damn cow with some damn fucking horns on it. What the fuck? Like,
she ain't known for cows. I can go. I know I can ride a little while, and I'm gonna see a cow in Virginia. Out of Florida, supposed to have nothing but alligators. I can go ride all up and down Florida, and then I don't see a single alligator.
So there's a rule though, because first of all, alligators aren't just out like, hey, look at me, I'm a gator. Any recessed body of water, standing water, you assume there's a gator in it, like legit. And if you don't want to assume that, take your own risk. But they out you in full effect.
I'm sorry. Dang.
It's not up to me to convince you.
Only alligator I had, I ate. Shout out to on catfish, Daytona Beach.
Mm-hmm. And then what else did I see? I saw a bat in my garage, this weekend, cleaning out the garage. It was dead, but it was still a bat. And I'm like, okay, so they got bats, see alligators. You got these, 5-foot cranes, these gigantic birds that are apparently endangered.
Oh, yeah, them jokes was walking out. Yeah,
they just be walking around, right?
They just walk among us.
They're like crazy people. Mm-hmm. Mother Nature crazy in general, man. Y'all saw that hurricane?
Saw it, yeah.
Was it Cat 5? How bad was it?
Shawty was in Jamaica when the hurricane came through.
Yeah. I feel sorry for everybody that took any losses, lost property, family, loved ones, anything through that. Man, that's sad. And that's just the start of hurricane season. That's letter B, so you know they got to go through a lot more.
It's crazy. It was really crazy because one side got hit pretty bad. And then the other side, Jamaica ain't that big. The other side ain't really get hit as bad.
I guess it's just targeted. And then I'm over here in Central Florida. That's what that rain was today. It's just like the bits and pieces of it. You got crazy out here.
It was raining like that.
Yeah, but you know, I spend 65% of my day inside. So, of course, I just see what I see through the patient's windows. I'm like, it's raining. Oh, it's hot. Oh, it's storming. never really be knowing how it's going. What's it been like up there up north for y'all?
Hot.
I hear them cicadas.
Hot as fuck.
Motherfucking, it don't make no sense how hot it is outside.
Yeah. When to the,
yo, you get the cicadas.
The crazy way right now, bro.
You said you hear them cicadas? Yeah.
That's what my knees and the hips and ankles sound like when I wake up. It's trash, bro. So we've reached that that low in sports. You know, that like 6 to 8 week period where basketball season ends and you're waiting for preseason football and you still haven't reached playoff.
Hey,
I ain't gonna lie to you. First of all, I'm watching the Orioles, but it's not playoff baseball, so I'm watching my O's. Right. They're actually doing something at AL East. But I did watch that Caitlin Clark, what's her name? Angel Reese. And then after watching it, I kind of asked myself, why did I watch it?
Why did you watch? Because they was kind of talking shit about, they weren't talking shit about Angel Reese, but they were trying to gas her up to win the rookie of the year.
She
had a case. She been running them double doubles up.
Double doubles.
She had a little case, but then it was crazy because then right after that, Caitlin Clark came out and dropped a triple double.
Triple double.
Like, all right, let's chill out for a second.
Like, Angel Reese had what I think like 21-16 in the game I watched where they played against.
It's still a lot of season left, but
How many games are in the season?
I think they play like 40 games. I don't think either one of them will make the playoffs.
Wait, for real?
As it looks right now, I don't think either one of them will make the playoffs. I think the Sky have a little bit better record than the Fever will. But I don't think either one of them will make the playoffs. The Sky have a better record right now than a lot of people thought they would. And then the Fever have a worse record than a lot of people thought they would, probably.
What was the preseason?
How many teams are there?
12, right?
That's more.
Can you name them? The question is, can we name them as a podcast?
You got the Liberty, you got the Sun,
So that's the New York Liberty and the Phoenix. Wait, the Phoenix Sun? Where the Sun at?
The Connecticut Sun.
There's a Connecticut Sun?
Yeah, they got a Connecticut Sun.
I did not know that. I know there's a Chicago Sky, Indiana Fever, Washington Mystics.
There you go.
You said it's the New York, Liberty?
Liberty in New
Las
York.
Las Vegas Aces.
Yeah.
Said the Connecticut Sun. That's half of them. Does Miami have a team?
The Dream in Atlanta. Miami does not have a team.
Atlanta Dream. Does Houston have a team?
Houston does not have a team anymore.
L.A.?
The Sparks are in L.A.
Okay. That's, eight. We need four more.
Phoenix Mercury, because the Suns do technically have a team out there. Phoenix Mercury,
that's nine.
Come on. The Seattle Storm, the Minnesota Lynx, the
one more.
Dallas Wings.
Ah, that's it.
That's it.
That's 12.
Is that about it? You sure?
I was counting on my fingers, and fingers don't lie.
Yeah, they all right, too. They don't, man, they need to get some. They need to score more, for real, the Sun. If the Connecticut Sun had somebody who would give them like 20, 25 a game, because it's a handful of women that can do that. If they had somebody that could consistently give them 25 a game, they would probably win a championship this year. They play the best defense when they want to. They play the best defense.
So do all the teams go to the playoffs since it's only 12 of them?
I don't think so, because the Fever didn't go. I know the Fever didn't go to the playoffs last year, and they were not.
How you going
to
miss the playoffs when there's six teams on each side? They just start off with a semifinal?
I mean, everybody don't want to make the playoffs. They get what you mean.
It's, if you got 12 teams, it sounds like you should.
She's not. So many questions right now.
Nah, you're wild. First of all, you're wilding. First of all, you're wilding. There's no way everybody makes playoffs in the WNBA. I know that. I know that that's not the case.
I'm not saying it is the case. I'm saying why not, though.
Yeah, with 12 teams, man.
Especially when, like, the Fever in the Sky had, like, the highest watched game, right? So even if they're the two worst teams in the
league. This is not the NBA now. You're not playing 80 games. You're playing 40 games. You've got 12 teams, but you still, like I said, playing 40 games. And you trying to fill, as a league, particularly right now, you're trying to fill a void between NBA season and NFL season.
I don't know, man. From a business perspective, I think there's money being left on the table. Why would
I agree.
You just put everybody?
Like, if Caitlin Clark's team finished dead last, they should still put them in the
playoffs. No, no, no.
It'll get views.
No.
I'd watch it.
No.
There's one view right there.
Hell yeah.
30.
That's where I draw the line at on the Caitlin Clark shit. A lot of shit that they did with Caitlin Clark, I'd have been cool with for the most part. But nah, you're not going to just everybody make the playoffs because Caitlin Clark is.
It's not a lot of everybody, though. It'd be different if it was 30 teams. You're talking about 12.
Nah, I don't care if it was. I don't care if it was 14.
Before our WNBA, if it's 14,
I don't care.
It's just funny you with these glasses outside complaining about WNBA playoffs. Is like, this is cracking me up.
You see the glare in this ring light. I don't want to be staring at this ring light and it's pitch black out here. It's comfortable.
Bro, if I had a crystal ball back in the days, I would have never, even with that, I couldn't predict this fucking happening right now. You out there with the fucking glasses on with this cadence talking about WNBA? Damn, man.
Come on, man.
That's true.
They be playing ball in the WNBA, low-key.
Nobody's saying that they're not.
They be playing ball.
So what?
Yeah, this is not a conversation to say that they don't ball. It is a conversation.
Ball, bro.
Yeah, like, they
definitely give you something to watch between, like you said, between. I ain't trying to watch this baseball. I can't watch much baseball on TV, no way.
Yeah.
But the good thing about it this year, though, we got the Olympics coming up, though. That's really what we need to be.
Shout out to the Olympics. And you said earlier, I think before we started recording, you said that breakdancing is now an Olympic sport?
Yeah, that one, breaking is what they call it. They don't call it breakdancing, so I guess breaking is more distinguished. The participants would be breakers, or I don't know what the fuck they come up with this shit at, but apparently breakdancing is an Olympic sport.
I mean, my money's on Marcus Houston and Omarion to take the show. You suckers just got served.
So I know for certain there's two niggas rolling over in their grave in Greece somewhere and blonde hair, blue eyes that had to wrestle each other into death, most likely in the dirt in the original Olympics, and look up and see they about to start breakdancing for a gold medal to represent their country.
I mean, hey, some people like to pop and line it, you know? How do you judge it? Is it like whoever does the most disrespectful move?
The most amount of oohs.
So, I don't know if it's you got served style or how.
It's got to be. At like some random or like war mode. Marcus Houston do a backflip in the middle of the stage, get it started. I don't understand.
We gonna send Common out there, watch. Had Common win a gold medal in breaking.
He can break down? I thought he just spit spoken word.
Nah, that nigga be him and Jada Kiss.
Wait. So your breakdancing roster is gonna be Common and Jada Kiss? That's all of all people.
You got to put
Breezy on there.
I bet the house right now that Common, Jada Kiss, and Chris Brown to go ahead and sweep the whole thing right now.
No. You won't even think Chris Brown until I said it. That's how I know you gone right now. Because at first, you were just going to send Jada Kiss and Common out there like, y'all got it. Going to rep the country.
Already said Chris Brown. So I was just talking about two niggas that just, I know for a fact, we'll send them wherever we need to send them and they'll go get it done.
Why would Jadakiss be breakdancing?
Don't ask me, as Jadakiss, why he was breakdancing. I don't understand. Don't ask. You can ask Common the same thing. I don't know what they was breakdancing.
All right. We need to get the U.S. dream team of breakdancers. All right. So we got to have four people.
I bet the house.
Chris Brown is on there.
Chris Brown, Common, and Jadakiss. We don't have to send them.
We're not. We got to veto that whole Jadakiss conversation. No. So Chris Brown, now you got to pick three other people.
Nah. Yeah.
Maybe like Sierra?
Yeah, disrespect. So breakdancing, or what I think is breakdancing, is the niggas.
You remember, what's that dude name? Kid of the Great, or whatever. He was on America's Got Talent and all that. Kid of the Great, whatever.
He was on America's Got Talent?
Yeah, he was on all of it. I have to send y'all a video. He can really go. But so Breezy, Kid of the Great. Who else would we have besides Jadakiss?
I mean,
you really disinterested in breakdancing Olympics?
Shaq, who you got? Shaq said he has some on there.
I'm throwing out a little white girl from the Missy Elliott videos, bro.
Oh yeah, is it worth it?
They're definitely gonna get some points from the judges. Let's be honest, bro. Let's be honest, because you know they do.
That's true. What else? So the white girl from Missy Elliott. You got Chris Brown, Usher. Nah, he can't flip like that no more.
I wouldn't put it past him.
I'd take him.
We couldn't take us. The beat of that one. I don't know why, but then
why?
I committed him so fast, I can't.
I used the good veto on Jada, because you going to veto Usher?
All right. Bro, it's the age thing, bro. If we over here talking about our knees, our backs, all this shit hurt, that nigga probably still hurt from the Super Bowl. Let's be honest. So I'm not putting him out here to compete on the world stage. I'm sorry, bro. It ain't going to work.
Yeah, but he got, you know, what did he do? He stretched. That's the thing we would never do with.
Nah.
Yeah. All right, fine. No Usher. Fine.
Yeah, they already executed the veto. It's over with.
All right. He says, doesn't it? All right. So then I got to repick. Leno, you got to repick.
I got to repick. Who am I sending?
There's got to be some ladies that would set it off.
Lady breakdancing?
Yeah.
Lil Kim move count as breakdancing?
That's the only move she got, I think.
I think it's a 10.
You just throw like the ultimate twerker on there.
So I think at least a 9, a solid 9. I take it. You know what I'm saying? We sound like we got some hitters already. We just got
get it. Let's rock then. Lil Kim, Chris Brown, the girl from Missy Elliott videos, and all of them dudes that was blood walking with in the Kendrick Lamar video in the Pop Up concert. All of them. They counted one person.
So Tommy Clown, all of them.
Russell Westbrook.
Oh yeah, we can go, baby. Oh, yes. We gonna win.
So what's our roster, dog? Russell Westbrook, Chris Brown, a girl from the Missy Elliott videos, and Lil Kim. We gonna take an L. We gonna make it past the first round.
And we got to give a post mortem spot to Lil Saint. All right, first and foremost, you got to do that as well.
Okay.
R.I.P. R.I.P.
I don't know what these other countries going to put against us. We going to win. If that's the roster, I don't know about Lil Kim. Hopefully she got her knees lubricated, but we'll be all right.
We also got the Jabberwockies as substitutes.
Are they American?
I don't know. I hope so.
They're Japanese. You just put out the wrong nation. Okay. I can get down with that. Is there, are there any other Olympic events y'all looking forward to?
Speed walking.
It's not an Olympic event, but you're 2 weeks away from the second grade, I think. Nah,
what?
It's longer than two. Okay, I'm boosting it. It's longer than 2 weeks. But
he is in dad mode. That's 30. He's like, this ain't an Olympic event. My son about to start the second grade.
Today is the 9th. I'm pretty sure. I'm going to confirm it right now that I'm thinking about it, because I done kept saying it.
You all just got a glimpse of his brain in perfect harmony. Yeah. And this is how it functions.
I bet the house he's going to be in school a month from today. He's going to be in school.
So you picked Jadakiss and Common for your Olympic team, and then your next favorite Olympic sport is your son starting second grade.
Oh, yeah, because that is, like you're talking about, that's an Olympic sport every year, dog. Don't even worry about it. Show time coming. Don't even worry about it.
Bruh, it was an Olympic sport, dog. You just got gold, bruh. You got gold.
Ah, there you go. Dadding. That could be a good Olympic sport, is being a dad. You got some big pants? You got the them New Balance?
Yes, I do have.
Them lawn cutting shoes?
Oversized. Yes, sir. Yes, I do.
You got the sun hat as well? Goddamn.
I haven't got to the hat yet. I don't like the, because I'm going to put the do-rag on. You know what I'm saying? I like it to, my body still takes the sun well.
We can tell.
Body still take the sun well, so I'm a hold on to that long as I can.
So we can tell.
But you know what else made me realize I crossed that 30 threshold? I went to the beach the other day with the wifey, and I had one of them PFG long sleeve fishing shirts. Those shirts are amazing. Oh my god!
God damn, bro!
I'm telling you
about that.
Have you worn one?
Yes, nigga. Bro, oh, I ain't gonna lie, man.
Those shirts are amazing.
One of them bitches, bro. Finally got one from Academy, bro. Game changer, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Leno, you know about these?
He don't.
All right, I'm sorry. I was still in dad mode. All right, put me back on game.
It's all good. The PFG shirts, the long sleeve PFG, like sun reflective, sun protective shirts, are one of the most amazing investments you can make.
Nah, I don't know nothing about that.
You've seen people.
Typically, like the fishing shirts.
The fishing shirts.
Oh, I'd have probably seen it and just don't know what you're talking about, but. The PFG?
It just literally has a letter. I can send you a photo. You're going to know it here to see it.
All right. Do that.
Those shirts are amazing because it's like sunblock in a shirt, and I didn't overheat or anything.
I talked all that.
And that sweat wicking technology, boy, I tell you what.
You can't beat it. You can't beat the sweat wick.
Sweat wiggity wiggity. Split liggity liggity. Yo, it's a new M&M.
Isn't that how it goes?
Oh, no, man.
All right. So we got that. The Olympics of dadding. Leno is making his case to win the U.S. Olympic trials in dadding.
This is bare minimum shit here, bro. Looking up the dates for your kids' first day of school.
Get you a PFG long sleeve shirt and everything will be okay.
Facts.
Oh, I done seen. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's ain't that special.
Right. Oh, you ain't put it on your skin yet. I'm telling you.
Yeah, this nigga don't know. You gonna realize one day.
Man, sorry why you said it like that, bro. It's like that.
I saw the price kept dropping on them. There was a stack of them at like Kohl's or TJ Maxx or something. And I was like, all right, let me just see what the hype is about. I went to the beach. I was like, oh. I know what they're talking about. It made everything better, yo.
And that's another thing, too. Like, fucking, I ain't gonna lie, man. Holidays come around. Something inside me knows, like, I daddy needs a fucking gift. I need to give myself something, bro. So if it's all clearance, I got a reason to go ahead and get it. I'm going to get that shit. I'm going to go ahead and get that thing knocked off the list. That's another thing I noticed.
I'm going to see what it's hitting on, man. I'll see what it's hitting on.
You get one, and it's good. It's a good shirt, dog. I can't even lie to you. Something else that we're making a transition to, about the fishing shirts. It is Shark Week. Are y'all fans of Shark Week?
I say I am.
Being short,
I can tell you the last time I watched the Shark Week.
Yeah, same.
Y'all just dropping the ball.
I mean, it's the same shit, though.
I mean, yeah, sharks, but the whole week is about.
I ain't gonna lie to you. I'm scared of sharks. I ain't only to be watching no shit about a shark. I ain't trying to see no motherfucking shark for real, for real.
You scared of them on the TV, too?
Yeah, them niggas got it. They got it. They got me on the team. I have a healthy respect for Shaw. No, sir.
On land and water.
Land and water. That, see,
they got you shook. You wouldn't even watch the TV, though.
Shook. Because if I was ever right there with a shark, it wouldn't be nothing I could do. It wouldn't be nothing. It wouldn't be nothing you could do if you right there in the water with a shark.
I mean, that's a lot of animals, right? There's a lot of animals that can merge you one on one.
Like what?
An elephant. A grizzly bear.
I don't agree with the grizzly.
I'm sorry. What?
I don't agree with the shark either, though.
I'll be honest with you.
The shark decide he gonna come and get you and get the knife and through that water like that. You can't even turn around before he up on you.
A grizzly bear can run like 35 miles an hour, can climb trees, can swim. How is not gonna get you?
That's another one that I'm not worried about. But I'm not worried about no grizzly bear.
Yeah, me either, man. I can get away from grizzly bear. I'll be right.
Like, not even that.
What's your method?
I feel like I'm going to be far enough from a grizzly bear that I can get away from a grizzly bear. Not like if I'm in there with a shark, and so it don't matter. So
you
going,
oh, because you can't swim, though.
Yeah, right? I can swim. I can swim like a fish, but I can't swim like a shark, nigga. Can't swim like a shark. No, you can't swim like no shark. It's over with.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one of the animals where you got to try and fight because you're going to get caught. Let's be honest. Your best bet is squad up.
Yeah, but y'all seen them videos, like if you flip a shark upside down, they just go limp and help
you
and drown.
Get in the water and flip
that
shark.
That's exactly what I want.
A grizzly bear, it don't take, y'all tripping. A grizzly is going to go to work on you. And they got noses stronger than a bloodhound.
Get in the water and flip a shark upside down and let me know how that works out for you.
I think you just won this argument.
I could. This isn't even an argument. What are we talking
about? Sorry, the discussion, the debate.
It's hypothetical. And the elephant. Y'all skip past that. You wouldn't be worried about elephant?
No, I'm not. No, I'm not worried about it. No.
Facts, man.
Fuck out. I'm not worried about elephant at all.
Then I said, I got a trunk.
I got laws of people killing elephants. All right, I'm not worried about elephant.
They got laws about killing sharks?
No, they don't.
It's not true.
That is not the only natural one-on-one fade there's in the sea.
There's nothing else in the sea that can kill you.
It ain't nothing nobody else can do for you if you one-on-one with a shark.
What about an eel?
Them
eel shark, kill you.
Them shark weak sharks? Yeah, forget about it.
An eel will murk you. You ever seen a leopard seal?
Man,
what don't murk saw?
You know where to murk all of that? A shark.
Hey, honestly, I like Shark Week with Leno because there's no hope. And
you know, Red Daddy from Friday, the sharks is Debo to me. No, I don't want nothing to do with them niggas. I'll be trying to get there every time we go through the aquarium. I might be trying to get through that zone. Like, if this motherfucker pull a deep blue sea and bust through this glass right here, you know.
You just be thinking random thoughts. You can't even focus. Man,
shark. Nothing to play with.
I like shark, but you can't even watch it, but I like it.
They cool, but like I said, I got a healthy respect for them. That's all.
Respect. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing going down with that. All right, fellas. Well, what we're going to do for our medical minute this time around, so we actually have an interview we recorded with Dr. Tim Stevens. He is an emergency medicine physician, and we were utilizing that to kind of just go through some of his tales and info from his time in emergency medicine and what he's seen in the emergency department. So we're going to get ready to switch it over and kick it over towards Dr. Stevens, y'all. Hang tight. All right, we now welcome in Dr. Timothy Stevens, emergency medicine physician, one of my classmates and homies going through the medical process. Tim, how we doing, brother?
I'm good, man. How y'all doing?
You know, another day in paradise. Shock.
Living, man. Living.
For sure. That's all we can do is living. So, Dr. Stevens, just wanted to bring you on here because it's always good to get a feel from anybody with your training and your expertise. especially just because, you know, I feel like a lot of people look at us as physicians, like we're chock full of a lot of information. And then there's a lot of stuff that we don't know, and they're surprised that we don't know. But I did think it was a good time to, like, you know, give your platform and your field some light and some shine. I know in our first season, I did do an episode. Each episode, I do something called a medical minute, and I basically broke down the difference between urgent care and emergent care and the need to go to each one. As our listeners can kind of tell, we're actually missing one of our co-hosts. He was in need of emergent care. We hope everything goes well with Leno, the Wave God, but we'll keep y'all updated when we get more information on that. So, Dr. Stevens, please, the floor is yours. Tell us about yourself, brother.
All right, where y'all want me to start at? So, I'm FMEM. So I did a residency in family medicine, then did a fellowship in emergency medicine. Did locums, still do locums now. I practice in about 5 different states, but now located in upstate New York.
Okay. All right, so you upstate New York. And for those of y'all that don't know what locums are, if you can get the gist, I used to be locum tenens as well. Traveling physicians, you go where there's a need. And something that we kind of know in our field about locum tenens and a need, when there's a need for a doctor, there's a reason why they don't have one already, right?
That is very true.
Yeah, man, it's crazy. The emergency department gets wild. I spent more time going through the ER when I was in residency as internal medicine. But now that I'm critical care, a lot of the patients, they get transferred to the unit at my facility. So, like, I don't see them until they hit the ICU doors. But you and all the other emergency medicine doctors, you know, y'all have a huge task as kind of the gatekeepers. You determine who stays and who goes. So can you give us a breakdown on, like, what the admission process would entail? Just more like, you know, somebody comes in sick, and what would be the next step one of our listeners would expect if they go to the ER?
So you come in sick. Nowadays, you'll see either one or two people. You'll see either emergency medicine doctor, or if it's deemed not necessary to see us, you will see what we call APP, which is advanced practical whatever provider. And if you see us, usually you are of the sicker person. We'll do an initial workup trying to figure out what's actually going on with you. Then if it's like, all right, you need to stay in the hospital for whatever reason, IV antibiotics, surgery, if you know your oxygen level is low, if you can't ambulate, you know, things like that, then you'll stay in the hospital for however long you need to stay in the hospital. And then usually either the intensivist or the hospitalist will take it from there. But we are the people who will initially work you up.
Okay. So then y'all are making a lot of decisions on really the intake and how sick somebody is. So how do you run through that? Like, what can you do to determine how sick somebody is? Because, you know, a lot of when anybody's feeling poorly or feeling bad, to them it's the worst day of their life. To you, it's like a Tuesday at 6 p.m. though. So how do you separate those out?
Emergency medicine is very algorithmic. So let's say if you come in with chest pain, we have like a chest pain protocol. If you're to see if you have any like coronary blockage or whatever, let's say if you don't and you're very low risk, you usually get sent home. So we kind of determine it by, hey, if can you do what we're going to do upstairs at home? If yes, you go home. If you can't do it, then you usually stay within the unit, and depending on how sick you are, depending on the unit that you usually go to. But usually if you can do it at home, what we give you, or you can take whatever we give you orally, you're usually gonna go home. If you can't, you're usually gonna stay. So, you know, there's different algorithmic approaches to if you stay or go.
Okay, thank you for that. I mean, cause I give pushback as an ICU doctor, cause in my mind, y'all admit everything. Like, why is this person coming? But I can say a lot of the specialties, to give the listeners another breakdown. So some hospitals do it differently, but usually the emergency medicine doctor isn't doing the admission of the patient. So what happens is they're handing the patient off. Like, yes. Think of the ER and the hospital as two separate entities owned by the same company.
Yeah.
So that's always good though. I mean, and when in doubt, I still do say it. Like, it's a lot safer and better of an option overall if you say, you know, ah, dang, I probably should just went to urgent care, versus you go to urgent care and you need to go to the ER.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole other problem, because hopefully you can make it. Right? You don't know the type of agreements they have at that hospital. You don't know which ER you're going to, you know, which hospital, you know, which ambulance, EMS service, a lot of stuff that matters. And, you know, this is critical. Like Dr. Stevens was talking about, like coronary injury, coronary syndrome, or blockages in coronary arteries. Time is myocardium, meaning the longer you wait, the more heart dies. Same with strokes. Time is brain. The longer you wait, the more brain dies. So I can definitely get down with that.
So you should always go to essentially ER as opposed to urgent care, basically.
I would put it like this. All right. If you stub your toe, go to urgent care. Matter of fact, don't go to urgent care. Stay your ass at home. No, but if you feel like you broke something, a lot of times, if it's not displaced, you can literally go to urgent care. They'll splint you. They'll send you to an ortho doctor. This will be the same thing that we do in an emergency room. If you feel like you just got a viral illness, urgent care. If you got like a urinary tract infection, urgent care. Hell, even if you, let's say if you're young, healthy, and you feel like you have pneumonia, technically you can go to urgent care because you can get oral antibiotics from that. The kicker is abdominal pain. A lot of abdominal pains is nothing, but a lot of abdominal pains is something as well. And a lot of times you can't determine if your abdominal pain is nothing or something.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the, you know, but if you like, oh man, I ate something, I feel a little nauseous. All right. You can go to urgent care for that. But yeah,
it's eat some Pepto-Bismol.
yeah. Before the like common people, they feel like everything is an emergency.
Yeah.
And I hate
your head a lot.
I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, bro, but you don't find a lot of middle ground, right? There's people that are either like, oh, I'm dying. And then there's people that are dying. You're like, yeah, it's just a little pulled muscle.
Sure.
Like, your heart rate is like 198. Is that bad?
How do you feel? It's true. That is very true. People usually just tend to come to the emergency room because we can take care of everything. We can take care of the urgent cares, right?
Mm-hmm.
We actually do have an emergency, you know, we can take care of that too. So,
okay.
I think most kids actually go to urgent care though. Like probably 90%, probably even more, can probably go to an urgent care.
Can you explain to us why the children more than the adults will be okay with that?
Yeah, so usually children are, so there's two like separate thing with children, right? Usually children are either really, really sick, there's nothing going along with them. 90% of children, there's nothing really going on with them. Like they have URIs, which is an upper respiratory tract infection, right? It's usually not bacterial, it's usually just viral. You usually will be okay, even if you don't take them to urgent care, they're gonna be perfectly okay. Right? Now, the ones who are like, you know, come in, respiratory distress, things like that, seizures, yes, you should go to emergency room. But that's far few in between. Most kids will be okay though.
Yeah. So kind of like, so what I'm hearing you say is that fathers know best, and they're like, he's fine. She's fine, isn't that?
Yeah, usually.
Yeah.
Usually they're fine. they're fine. Like I give an example. So like our admission rate for kids is probably less than 1%. It's probably less than 1%. I can only think of me admitting like two kids within the past probably 7 months.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that.
Well, for our listeners, I should ask this earlier, but tell us about your journey. Like, I know this is probably a question you get all the time, right? Like, what made you want to become a doctor? What made you want to, you know, did you know you wanted to become an emergency medicine doctor, right? Like, tell us for the listeners your journey, man.
Let's see. I did not know I wanted to become a doctor. When I was in middle school, high school, I wanted to be a kingpin. I ain't want to go to school.
Everybody want to be Big Meech, baby.
Right. I was going to go to Detroit. Like, I was going to become a kingpin because my family's from Detroit. Like, that's where I was going to go. I was just like, I got this. I'm out. Nah, but When I was in high school, my mom called me selling it, blah, blah. She cried. She said, you got to go off to school. So I went off to school.
In West Philadelphia.
So I went off to school, football scholarship.
Where'd you go?
So my first year, I was at Wabash College, which is a little liberal arts college in Indiana. And then I transferred my sophomore year to Howard University. Then it wasn't until probably like the end of my sophomore year where I actually figured out what I wanted to do. I met a black doctor who was in his, he was in medical school at the time. And he kind of
wanted a doctor. Hmm? So he wasn't a doctor, he was a student.
Yeah, at the time he wasn't a doctor.
They used to fry me up about that, I'm sorry.
At the time he wasn't a doctor.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, but he literally asked me, he was like, what do you want to do? I was just like, I don't know. I think at the time I wanted to be like, do psychology, but I wasn't kind of like married to that. He was just like, you know, I always see you in here. He was like, you know, I feel like you're a smart kid. You should.
In where? Where is that the scene? Where you at?
Oh, sauna? I was in the library. So I was
library?
Always.
Okay.
Yeah. So we had a.
Y'all niggas in libraries, man.
Yeah.
God damn, man.
Shocker. Science library. For everybody at Howard, they know where that's at. But yeah, I was always there. I was always on the third floor. You know, I was just, you know, chilling, just do my work. And he was always in there, of course. So he kind of like had me tag along with him, went to Howard University Hospital, went kind of through everything with him, really enjoyed what they seen. I was always into sciences. And was just like, oh, I want to do this shit. So end up having to kind of like take all my courses within a short period of time. So summer school, I took four classes in summer school. I took two physics and two chemistries while working a full-time job at a factory. And then my junior, but the first of my junior, I already took biology. So my first of my junior year, that's when I took my organic chemistry and everything. And then that's when I took the MCAT and applied to medical school.
Got into the greatest medical school on earth. Rush University, shout out.
Yeah.
Let's go.
It was crazy. I actually didn't know about Ross until it was actually a girl who was actually in residency at Howard Hospital who my cousin knew. So my cousin was, he was in a PhD program for chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew him and she went to Howard. So when she like kind of like came down, she, you know, my cousin told her, oh, he's applying. She was like, oh, you should apply to Ross and whatever. That's how I kind of figured out about Ross. I found out about Ross.
Bro, that's wild, man. Everything was about connections and people that I guess you passed ways within your journey. They got you. That's tight, man. That's tight.
Mm-hmm. That's what's up, man. Appreciate you for telling us that. You went from wanting to be a kingpin with a pirate to an ER doc with the Curlex. Let's go.
Hey, that's still good. Possible though. Still possible.
I would say still slanging drugs, boy.
I tell my patients that all the time. I was like, I'm a drug dealer. I just spent $500,000 on my education to do it.
Right. I'm still be slanging ketamine everywhere. Everybody get ketamine.
The K hole. Oh Lord. Yeah, but they earn their medications. You know.
Yeah.
They don't come in asking.
Yeah. Usually that's, you don't. You acting crazy. You come in my shift. You don't make past the doors without getting sedated. you either get ketamine or you get booty juice.
What is booty juice, please?
No, all my nurses and all the pharmacists know when I say booty juice, they're like, all right, cool. That's B-52.
The B-52?
Yeah, it's booty juice.
Oh,
like,
God.
You hit the door.
So the composition of, well, I guess as critical care medicine, I should see what Dr. Stevens' combo is, but what's the B-52 for our listeners?
So our B-52 is Haldol, 5 milligrams, Ativan, 2 milligrams, and Benadryl.
Okay. Benadryl, 50.
50, yes.
A lot of Benadryl.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know.
Yep.
Why? And then if you acting crazy, like if you spitting on people and stuff like that, yeah, you deserve the ketamine.
That's something you see a lot on the reg. Hmm? What's the craziest thing you've seen?
With what? When it comes to what?
in the job. Great, crazy stories.
Give me something bloody.
I had esophageal varices, like a really bad esophageal varices.
Were they cirrhotic?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. All right, speak English.
Yeah. Pathophysiology explanation. Person has cirrhosis, meaning their liver is shot. The liver gets a lot more blood than anyone would ever think until you see someone bleed from a complication.
Yes.
It gets a lot of blood volume. So when it's cirrhotic and it's broken up, usually the liver is supposed to be big and soft. It's this very nodular, hard rock that doesn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Of all the like 25 metabolic and, you know, intrinsic properties that it has for your body, it doesn't do any of them. So toxins build up and all these things. One of the other issues is that all the blood flow. So like right now, Shock, you're eating what, Fruit Loops?
Yeah, Fruit Loops, Fruity Pebbles.
I got there it. We go.
Shout out.
Basically, real quick, when you eat something, you get a lot of blood flow to the stomach. What happens is you're digesting and breaking it down, the intestine, all that crap. But the blood flow to the GI tract, to the stomach, is absorbing the nutrients and then sending it to the liver. Liver shot in cirrhosis, blocked up with nodules. So, got to take a different route. Blood still got to go to the heart. So it goes through the veins of the esophagus. They are not meant to handle high levels of blood.
Yes.
So you don't want that shit.
Ew. It's like, I can describe an esophageal varices is like, imagine if you had to funnel all the water from like your bathroom sink to your kitchen sink, and the only thing you have is not even duct tape. You got masking tape and Walmart shopping bags.
Mm-hmm.
You think you're going to leak? Exactly.
Yeah, nah, not a good situation.
So there you go, esophageal varices. So that's the seed. You blood where it shouldn't be, flowing where it shouldn't be at all. Actually,
yeah. And usually these people, when they do, if it's bad and they wait long enough, usually when they come in bleeding, they come in like projectile vomiting blood kind of everywhere. Yeah.
Looks like The Exorcist or Carrie or something.
Yes, it is not a pretty scene. It's literally like people be on a stretcher laying flat and be like, and just like splat blood everywhere. And it's like, okay. Oh, you done bought yourself a tube, sir.
Hopefully you got a shield on when the motherfuckers come in.
Yeah, no.
This nigga walk out covered in blood.
Yeah.
I ain't gonna lie, yeah, that's probably the bloodiest non-trauma that I've dealt with is the bleeding cirrhotic with varices, because it's a pump with no stop valve, man.
It keeps coming too. And people know they about to die too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is that? I'm done.
Those words. Oh, please tell Shock about those words when a patient says it.
Oh, when they say that I'm about to die, they're usually about to die. If a patient tells me like, yeah, I'm about to die. Yeah, they usually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so 90% of the time, usually they hit it.
You'd be surprised. Like, it's usually the younger. Like the trainees and the younger people in medicine that don't take those serious. Like, oh my God, he said he's gonna die. Hey, get the news from last. People die here.
Right.
Oh Lord,
that's wild.
So would you? So it was very. What'd you have to do? Call GI or what'd you do?
Yeah. So first we had to stabilize him. So first we had to intubate him. So the good thing about, the bad thing about intubating somebody with esophageal varices is just that when you go to intubate them, it's just blood that you see. So you can't really see the vocal cords, but there is not getting.
Aim for the bubbles.
Yeah.
Aim for the bubbles.
Yeah. So there is a way where you can put a person in a certain position where the blood is kind of funneling down, and then you should be able to see the cores with a good suctioning and everything like that, so you can intubate the person.
That word intubate, man.
Yeah, that word.
Suspect, it's, man. It sounds like childish mind of mine. Like,
what, you keep thinking of masturbate?
Yeah, man. Yeah. The cousin of masturbation right there.
Intubation.
Hope the patient's out. I get it. Okay.
Yeah, so really for our job, it's really when somebody comes in like really sick, our job is really just to kind of like stabilize them, get the work up, and really send them upstairs. We're not
to
really,
the intensivist.
Yeah, we're not really like managing these people. It's really stabilize the person. Hey, this person about to die. You need to save the person, stabilize them, send them upstairs so they can get really like proper workup.
Stabilization is a part of management. I see, this is why I butt heads with emergency medicine doctors, because they will call me with this exact same scenario and say they are hemorrhaging, they have been intubated, the blood pressure is 62 over 40. Will you take them? And then I say, how the hell are they going to get here? And he's like, the elevator. You get kind of blood pressure.
Elevator.
Like, what you mean? That's one of the funny ones, though, like where we're trying to literally delineate, like, and this is no BS. Like Dr. Stevens can tell you, can they survive the like 3 minute trip to get to the ICU?
Yeah.
Because what you want to have is like, if something bad is going to happen, it can happen in the ER. We can do our best to fix it. It's poor outcome. It can happen in the ICU. I can do my best to fix it. But elevators, hallways,
yes,
bathrooms, you don't have anything in there.
CT scanners, yeah.
Oh, CAT scans are the worst. Somebody's heart's about to send a CAT scan.
Done.
End of space.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's not a lot of stuff.
What I say, and this is what I teach my residents as well. When I say stabilize somebody, I look at the three components in ABC, right? Is the airway intact or do you need to take the airway? Cool. The airway is stabilized.
B and the A go together, yeah.
Yeah, B really goes together, breath sounds, whatever. Then C, circulation. So is how is the blood pressure, right? I'm not sending somebody upstairs with a blood pressure or a MAP of like 40. Like that's a part of actually stabilizing this patient, right? So once the person goes upstairs, they should at least, I always practice, if they stay down here or if they go upstairs without no intervention at all, they should at least survive 24 hours, unless, of course, the person unless the person is like DNR, DNI, and all the other stuff, and they don't come for measure, then it's just like, all right, whatever.
What's dinner and deny? What's dinner and deny? What's that mean?
So DNR, DNI is do not resuscitate, do not intubate. So don't do CPR, don't resuscitate.
Leave me alone.
Basically,
is a very valid option, y'all. Please, like, I know we joke around with a lot of things, but like, so many times we get these issues where people look at this as like a death sentence. You got to understand, for us as doctors, a lot of these people, their death spiral or the process that got them there started way before they met us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like, I've gotten to the point where I've literally just had to say it before. I'm like, I didn't do this.
Yeah. Right.
But people want to die with dignity, right? That's one of my thoughts. It's like, make sure that somebody, like, if it is their final time, they go out with dignity. With class and on their own terms and how they would have wanted to go out. My bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and people who come in, like, had a cardiac arrest and they're 97. Depends on how long they've been down. Like, can we just let them go peacefully? They're 97.
Exactly.
We can let them go. We can let them go peacefully.
You've been talking about Grey's Anatomy. This is funny you say that, because I just watched an episode of Grey's Anatomy. I just started the show because you always talking about it and all that shit. So I was like, all right, let me give it a shot. Literally, the lady from the Wayne's Brothers show was on it, and that's exactly what she had on her chart was DNR. So I looked it up. I knew that shit already, dog.
Let's go halfway there. I ain't mad at you, for real. I mean, as long as you remain educated in it and have some level of knowledge of what is occurring, right? Because, like, I feel like I've talked about before, like, medical literacy, which, actually, Steven sees it more than I do, right? Medical literacy, for me, my patients are usually unconscious, and I'm explaining to families, like, a lot of what's going on. Mm-hmm. But, Dr. Stevens, I know you're seeing everything. I mean, can you explain how it is ranging that medical literacy from, like, what level of maybe a five-year-old's education, even an adult, to another medical professional? How do you weed that out?
What do you mean, like, when it comes to like explaining it,
So you get a simple diagnosis and you got to do like a overnight chest pain obs, I think. Mm. Like, how do you match that wavelength of the patient and what they're giving you? Like, you know, some people you say MI and they're like, my what?
Yeah.
And
yeah. So, and this is something else I teach my residents as well. If you can't explain it in layman's terms, that means you don't know it, all right? So you should be able to explain this thing to, you know, just a regular Joe that's walking down the street, right? Now, where I'm at, it gets kind of hard because we do have a lot of, like, immigrants that come into the area. So where we would think of, like, oh, you know, this person has a normal high school education, these people don't, right? So then then that gets a little hard to explain, like, hey, what's actually going on? But if I really need to explain something, I'll draw a picture for them. Like, all the ERs have, like, a little whiteboard in there. You know, I don't have to do that often, but there are some times when you'd be like, this is what's going on. Right? Yeah. You draw a little picture for them. Everybody, you know, can get with the picture. So, but yeah, it's just really just kind of breaking it down in, like, layman's terms, not, you know, using too much medical jargon. Really just to be like, you know, giving examples, just like the hose example, like, hey, this is what's going on. She's getting backed up. You don't want it to get backed up. I have had people ask me questions where I'm just like, never had that question before. So I had a lady who was, she had an upper GI bleed, and she needs to stay to get scoped. And one of her family members was like, oh, why is it back to bleed? She's like,
good question.
So I'm like, oh, that's a good question.
Some stuff is so basic. Like, I had, who was it? This lady, I was telling her, we got to put her on oxygen. She's like, what do you mean by oxygen? I'm like, dang. I mean, O2, air? I need some air. That's outside. I'm like, yeah. And then the the other one, this lady, I was... She had a bunch of, like, freckles, liver spots, or whatever. So I asked her that. She's seen a dermatologist. She said, a derma what? I said, a dermatologist. He said, oh, you mean the gynecologist for your skin? Yeah. Well, and I'm telling you, I literally was thinking, I was like, that does count, don't it?
Not wrong. Man.
Yeah. You know, but that'd be weird. Like, if I said some type of thing like that, like, you know, you got a headache. Did you go see the urologist for your head? Which head? What are we talking about? Going on here.
It do be like that. I'll say the word. Let's say I'll say, you know, did you see GI doctor? Who's the gastroenterologist? Who's the stomach doctor? Oh yeah. Like, I literally have to, like, break it down. Like, did you see the stomach doctor? Yes, I see the stomach.
Mm-hmm. We don't make it easy on patients, though, too, right? Like, if you have, like, electrophysiology, interventional cardiology, cardiac anesthesia.
Yes.
And a cardiothoracic surgeon all involved, they're just going to, like, stare at you, right? I mean, it's like.
Yes.
All important, all completely different, all make a lot of money.
Yes, it's true. Very
so, true. We don't help people a lot. So I usually just keep it simple. Heart doctor, lung doctor, stomach doctor. But then they ask, what type of doctor am I? I say, I'm the ICU doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And like, what does that mean? Like, it means you don't want to meet me. Like, yeah, most of the people that have to meet me is like, crap. It used to be a struggle for that. That's another one for you, doc. It's like, so when you get the critical patient that comes in, like, you're one of the first high-level providers. Yeah, you usually are the first high-level provider. No disrespect to EMS or anybody, but, like, you're the first doctor that these families see. When you see that chart and say, like, all right, MVC, unrestrained, maybe you already have imaging or something like that, how do you go about that? How do you handle those difficult situations?
Again, it's still algorithm to it. You know, I think we see these things so many times, it's kind of like a second nature to us. And then every situation gets handled a little bit differently, right? I always say, is this a H&P person or is this a ABC person, right?
What does that mean?
So if somebody comes in, right, and we have time, like, they're not sick, they're an H&P person, right? History of pregnant illness, right? I can sit down, I can talk to them, hey, what's going on, H&P person, or just an ABCD person, like, hey, this person is critically ill, we need to check airway, breathing, circulation on the person, all right? So I usually put people in those kind of two categories. You either HP or you're ABC. Usually, if you're an ABC person, usually come in by ambulance. Not all the time, but usually you do. And then if you're an HP person, you usually walk into the ER. So that's usually how I handle anybody who's actually coming in. Like, are you stable? And we can say if you're stable, literally by the time we walk into the room, we can tell if you're stable.
How? What? Oh, never mind. I know how.
We can just look. So, I mean, if you've been doing it long enough, you could just look at a person and tell, like, what's going on. Like, I can tell.
Sick, not sick.
Right. Yeah. I could tell, like, this person, you coming in for generalized weakness. I come in, I look at you, you looking dusky and pale. Your hemoglobin is probably low. I can probably guess it by the time I just sit in there and look at you and be like, all right, cool. So a lot of times what I do is when the EMS is bringing a person in and there's not a lot of people, especially in the ER, that's rushing to the patient. But let's say there's like two nurses there. I kind of just like sit back and kind of like hear the story and kind of
gather information.
Yeah. Like I'm really just kind of sitting back and just like looking. I'm like, all right, you want to do something now to this patient or can I just, you know, just sit back, talk to the patient and get the story and see what's going on.
Yeah.
But again, that I think that comes with a level of like comfort and just going through these scenarios, you know, hundreds of times as well.
Yeah, man. I think that highlights like the expertise and the necessity for training and honing your craft, right? Like I think we've all been there as physicians where you got that moment where a patient's getting triaged or worked up or, you know, new admission or something's going on and you've got nurses and staff and they're doing their job, moving the patient, connecting the patient, doing it. And then there's that one piece of information that changes your whole mood. And you're like, all right, let's stop all that talk, you know, I don't care about what they have for Sunday dinner.
Right.
Go ahead and give me that chest tube. Go ahead and give me that central line because it's about to go down. All right. So I'm trying to think, like, because I want to give my, because I know I don't have any for comparison, but I want to give one of my car stories. But kind of like you, I got to think about, like, is it pediatrics, OB-GYN cases, bread, butter, internal medicine, trauma? Most people like the trauma, so.
Trauma's easy. Trauma is, so. I break down trauma to two different types of trauma. So,
did you get shot or did you shoot?
Right. So,
I'm messing with you.
I call it either blunt trauma or penetrating trauma, right? So, when trauma either goes to urgent care or it needs to go to a resuscitation bay. That's what I believe. That's what I always believe. If you're in like an MVA accident and you know you just backed up into a car, you can go to it.
Now, with them attorneys out there, the now, offices that get your money fast, they true. Gonna send.
All right, when it comes to medical legal, yes.
that's something
totally different, yes. Yeah. But in terms of just like strictly just medicine, then it's like, all right, cool. All right. I usually, like, unless it's like a really bad, you know, MVA where it's like multiple flips and you were going fast or a pedestrian was hit by a car, then it's like, all right, cool, this person needs to go through a recession chase, right? Right? Or if it's like a penetrating trauma, even a lot of gunshots are kind of like, where did it stop at? Right? Where, you know, you got shot in the butt, all right, where did it stop? You know, if it's just, I just got shot in the butt and that's it, all right, cool. Make sure no vessels were hit and everything. A lot of times you can, you know, depending on where you're at, you can go home. So yeah, it's over those two. Probably the worst trauma I've probably seen was the worst trauma I actually seen was not in medicine, actually. The worst trauma I seen was in high school with my cousin, actually. And he was, we were leaving the club, two different cars. Somebody came up to, he was in the passenger side, in the car in front of me, and somebody just came up just shooting, right? So he got shot a total of 7 times Jeez. Yeah, he got shot a total of 7 times. I don't really remember. Most of them was in the head. He ended up not making it. But that was probably like the worst part of trauma I've seen. I've seen like gunshot wounds and everything. Somebody actually getting shot in the head, but it's just like a singular bullet or whatever. But yeah, that's probably be the worst trauma I've personally have seen. Really bad traumas are farmer traumas. And people don't think of it like, oh,
you said farmer?
Farmer, yeah.
We have a farmer on the podcast. We've got Farmer Shock over here with how many chickens?
20.
Trampled
20.
Cows.
You said cows?
Yes, where they get trampled by a cow. Them be bad.
It's real.
Bad. Them be the bad ones. Like, them be like, all right, you...
Are you laughing?
Why are you laughing?
Be that live worse, man. I practice in Atlanta and Florida, so I haven't seen a whole lot of cow tramplings, but like, let's see. So if we're talking about trauma, it's either going to be burns, because burns can be very, very mild or very, very, very bad. I had a guy with 88% burns. Like, he ain't have no eyelids. So when I was talking to him, and he tried to blink, and you see this film come down like a fish. Thought that was crazy. Didn't know what to say about that one. That was a bad one. And then I learned what an internal decapitation was from a radiologist, and never heard of that.
Internal decapitation?
So internal decapitation is basically categorized as a complete severing of your internal cord, of your spinal cord, but it didn't cause a fracture. So it was actually a whiplash injury. But the vehicle that hit the individual was going like 120. So the force that their head jolted just severed their spinal cord, but kept it in place. So when they showed up on scene, they were just like, they're not breathing.
So is that the definition of decapitation? Is the spinal cord getting severed? External decapitation?
Yeah, external, you can see it like a guillotine, right? Head comes off. Internal, head's still on. They just don't know why nothing's working.
Damn.
So those are bad. And then I can't even tell you probably the crazy. Only reason is because of the situation, I would say, from my craziest medical ER experience, because I worked at a facility that had this, I think it was like the second COVID positive patient in the state of Georgia. And I was tasked with seeing this person before that diagnosis was made. And this was early on, like early on 2019, when, you know, the CDC was taking all of the test results and like wouldn't tell you if it was positive or negative. And they were just like, all right, well, you know, quarantine them either way and get ready to intubate, all this stuff. Person was coming from a nursing home, short of breath on a BiPAP. And those that don't know what a BiPAP mask is, it's like the CPAP that people wear at night, pushes air in, pushes air out. All the air that was in goes out. So it's all throughout the room. So I put on an N95, which Dr. Stevens, you probably remember. You remember we all used to get those masks for like TB cases?
Yes.
Yeah. So I had it on. They said I was causing a widespread panic. So they said that they were going to call the chief medical officer of the hospital if I didn't take it off. I'm a brother of color. I was like, hey, if you want to see him, you go see him. Accepting applications. But if I'm going to see him, this is what I'm going to wear. 3 minutes later, the CMO, which is basically the medical president of the hospital, walks into the ER saying, you know, that mask is a bit much that you got on there. I'm like, No. Then proceeds to say that I was scaring the other employees by wearing it. And I don't think I've ever had like an entire like group of physicians go to bat for me like my residency program did in that moment. Like, what do you know, they all were like, what do you want them to do? It's a new disease. People are dying left and right. And they're like, well, we only have one case in Georgia. Mind you, this was an index case of an outbreak that killed 38 individuals at a nursing home over the next 2 months. I ain't going out like that.
Crazy, man.
I got that Osmosis Jones in me, though. So always, my immune system always fighting. All right.
It's nice.
All right. So let's get ready to finish up. Dr. Stevens, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate you sharing some of these stories. I would like to finish, and I'll let Shock go if he has another question, but I want to hear one more story from the ER. Can you give me your best or craziest or wildest psych patient?
Psych patient? Yes, actually. This was in the Bronx. We had a psych patient. He had bipolar, schizoaffective, he's depressed, whatever. So what made him crazy was he was 6'8", about 260 pounds.
Oh, so like same size as me.
And just like, talked, right? And I'm talking about crazy, like he was picking up stretchers, throwing them.
Ooh, those aren't like. Yeah.
So trying to sedate him was like damn near impossible, right? We had to intubate him just to keep him from destroying the department.
Mm.
Yeah, it was literally that bad.
Who gave him the sedating med? Not who ordered it, who injected it into him? You said he was a Hulk?
Oh, it was a nurse. So we had to have all security on deck, like all security on deck. Like security from upstairs, all security on deck, right? Yeah, to hold him down. We had police, actually, because he came from the prison. So the police came in as well, tried, you know, holding him down. So we had to strap him to the bed. So we do 4-point restraints. So what 4-point restraints are is you strap your legs and strap your hands, right? Actually, take that back. We had to do 5-point restraints where you strap your chest down as well.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Just strap his chest. What's his chest gonna do? My God.
Listen, that man was like, we gave him 2 rounds of the booty juice. He did not.
You can't say that on somebody that came from prison. Like, this is not, I don't like that phrase, okay?
So that didn't touch him. We gave him ketamine, which like kept him down for a little bit, but he popped back up. So literally I probably gave him usually when we intubate somebody, I usually give somebody 1 to 1.5 milligrams per kilogram of ketamine. He was up to 3 milligrams per kilogram of ketamine, right?
And you said he weighed like 260?
Yeah.
You gave him like 300 of ketamine.
Yeah, we maxed out on ketamine for him.
So and he survived that? Because that's like lethal injection dose.
Yeah, no, he was fine. He was fucking, you know, this is intubating. Like once we pushed that, we had to intubate it. Cause we didn't do it all at once. We used the 0.5 first, then we used another 0.5.
Okay. Yeah. I thought you pushed 300 at once. I was like, okay.
Yeah, we didn't do all at once.
Yeah, that'll kill you.
We kind of like scaled
a little bit.
And then we had to use Rock-A-Roll, of course. And
shout out that Rock.
Yes.
Shout out that Rock.
But that was all hands on deck. I mean, that literally took us fucking hours.
Man, on the speaker. Code 10, we got a big ass nigga out of the fucking breaking shit. All hands on deck. Now, please. That's wild.
Yeah. That's wild.
And the part that I always like, I am not envious of EM for is like, you have that case. And then in the room next door, you have like a 3-year-old with an earache and a mom who is perturbed.
Yes.
Just so upset. She's like, can I get some service? Like, yes. Dear God, lady. I got Chick-fil-A.
Yeah. When people come in to the ER, they feel like some people anyways, they need, hey, I've been here for an hour. Yeah. You've been here for 10 hours. So which one do you do?
Yeah. People get mad. I've been here for an hour. I got here at 7 a.m. What's up?
Right.
What are you talking about? I still ain't get what I wanted either.
Right. Trying to go home too.
No, like you get those AMA. We can talk about this forever. But hey, Shock, you got anything else?
Oh man, just appreciate you for coming on and sharing your journey, sharing your stories, and it was a pleasure.
Of course.
Thank you so much for checking in with us. Anything you want to say to listeners, anything for future wisdom or anybody wants to do medicine, Dr. Stevens, anything for us?
No. No, if it's your passion, you know, you got to always go for your passion. You go get the good and the bad with it. But as long as the good outweighs the bad with it, you know, it is what it is.
There you go. Well.
And there's always a back door to everything.
Yes, there is, even for the booty juice.
Can beat me to it.
Oh, Lord. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Stevens, for checking in. And we just appreciate you for coming on, man. You're always welcome back.
Of course. Thank y'all for having me.
From the fellas at Do-Rags and Stethoscopes, you know that we love y'all. We care. We always want to make sure that we leave y'all with whatever words of wisdom that we can. Words of wisdom that I would like to drop for y'all in this summer season is to stay safe. Get you one of them PFG shirts. Stay out of the water. Be careful about them sharks. Keep your eyes on the prize, y'all. Shock Little, what y'all got?
Stay hydrated out there. It's hot, niggas. All right. Be safe.
I got the same thing that y'all got because I was going to say it's too hot out here, man. It's for real. Check on you people. Just how to make sure everybody somewhere cool. Praying for those that don't have nowhere. Really feeling for those that don't have nowhere to be right now.
Macy and some water. All right, y'all. From all of us at Do-Rags and Stethoscopes, we out.
Peace.